until he says it's working. Just to be sure. Ok, nå funker det. Veldig bra. Ok. Just for all of you who will connect later to this recording, we have had some technical problems, so that the first recording is about 50 minutes only. And there we spend time looking at the group model building procedure. So I hope you still can make sense out of the written form. Otherwise, ask me. This is a section which is more of interest, so that you for understanding how we actually create models of use for organizations. So it is not so important for your examination. It is more important so that you understand the importance, the relevance, the use of system dynamics and how we create solutions for companies and organizations. Just to finish this introduction, I was saying that we have a program, a project, which is European, to study the resilience of Europe and to propose resilience management guidelines. And what I told you, you can actually see in this link here, which I will also make available in Fronta, and there that explains how the different components of the project work together. And in that there is a system dynamics model, that is this one, which is being created, will be created using group model building. And in this project, myself here, I am scientific coordinator, and there are 13 partners, and here are the partners at the Center for Integrated Emergency Management, to which I belong, then the Spanish University of Navarra, the University of Strathclyde in Scotland, Linköping University in Sweden, ECLAY, which is a multinational organization created by the United Nations, so as to create solutions, sustainable solutions. And ECLAY is helping hundreds, if not thousands, of cities across the world to become more resilient and sustainable. And then there is the seven cities in Europe that work with us: Kristiansand in Norway, Donostia in Spain, Glasgow in Scotland, Vejle in Denmark, Bristol in the United Kingdom, in England, Rome in Italy, Riga in Lithuania, and DIN, which is the German standard organization. Okay, so with us, I leave this information to you. This first part was more so that you can see the relevance and use of system dynamics in practice, and I don't think you have missed too much, even if the first recording had technical problems. Okay, any questions by voice or SMS? Okay, then we go to the second part, which we will look again at the quality improvement paradox. This was something that you dealt with in your first project, and now I will come back to that and introduce you to a system dynamic model that delivers a lot of insights, even if it's still quite simplified. So let's look at this. The title of the lecture is A Simple System Dynamics Model of Process Improvement. And we start again with the conceptual model that we developed last time and that you have been looking again in connection with the first project. In this model, we investigated what affects the performance of any organization in any process. And there are two things that affect the performance. The one is how much time is spent working, so how many hours per week the company or the organization is in total working to do that process. And then the capability of the process to deliver performance. And capability is simply how effective it is, how much it can produce in terms of results per unit of time, whether it is producing something or serving some needs or whatever. Then when there is a performance gap, in that the desired performance differs from the actual performance of the organization, this performance gap can be closed in two ways. The management can press on working more time. This creates a balancing loop, working hard or harder, that will indeed tend to close the gap. The alternative, and there are alternatives because you can do both things. You have limited resources and you have a trade-off, how much you put to something, how much you put to the other, that's together. So you can do both things, but with a trade-off. If you do more of the one, you do less of the other. So the other decision is to the pressure to improve the capability, which is the work smarter loop. This will lead to time spending on figuring out how can we improve the process, and this will need some time to deliver results, and that will lead to advances, gains, or investments in capability. Capability will become higher, and this will help close their performance gap as well. On the other hand, the capability is something that accumulates, that grows, and stay for a while. Once you have had good ideas, typically they stay forever. You have learned new things. Once you have invented a better process, the better process is there forever. The only thing that can happen is that you can forget things, or you can mix it up, or the process and the tools that you are using can erode away and so on. So actually the capability, even if it stays and it has a tendency to grow with time, it can also be losing over time as errors creep in, the machines or whatever get maintenance problems and so on. If it is IT solutions, they can also creep with errors, the performance can decrease, and so there is capability erosion. And then these two balancing loop, work harder, B1, work smarter, B2, address in principle the performance gap. But then that's not the whole story, because pressure to do work, the more you pressure you do to that, the less time you will have on improvement, or the other way around. If you exert less pressure to do work, then you will have more time on improvement. This creates a reinforcing loop that goes like this. And this reinforcing loop will reinforce whatever strategy that is dominant. So if you are pressing a lot to work harder, then the reinforcing loop will reinforce the working hard. But if you are working smarter, the reinforcing loop will reinforce the solution of working smarter. That's typical of reinforcing loops. They can increase some capability or some process, or decrease it, both things. And in the one direction it's good, in the other direction it's not. In the good direction we call it a virtuous loop. In the wrong direction we call it a vicious loop. And that's the problem here, that this system can go in a solution of pressing the organization to work harder and harder and harder and harder, or it can help you to fly and work smarter and smarter and smarter. But then you have to do it right. But that's not all, because there is a third balancing loop, B3 shortcuts. Why is the mouse not being here? It is. This loop here arises because the total time is a given. The total time of an organization is simply how many hours per week that can be worked. And how many hours per week? That is given by the number of employees times how much they work per week. If you add that, if you have 40 employees and each work 40 hours, then you have 40 times 40, which is 1600 hours per week that you can spend. So you have to divide that time in two. One, to actually conduct the process, time spent working. The other part will be time spent on improvement. And the more of the one, the less of the other, and the other way around. So because of this, closes the loop, and it is a balancing loop. And we call it shortcuts because this will be activated when it is needed to take time that should be spent on improvement and to assist on working harder because you are under time pressure. And this balancing loop can, even if you are working smart, can lead you to the working hard alternative, which is very difficult to get out because you get trapped. But still, this model is a model that we cannot simulate. In the project, I gave you a model that I had created that simulated, and then you can ask now, why are we now going to discuss a simpler model? You will understand the project model a bit better once we go through the details of a simpler model. For the project model, I only ask you to document it and to express some things and see how it's simulated. You didn't have to create it. Now we get more insight by looking at the following. The model was proposed by a student of Sturman. You may remember that Sturman and Ripeni had proposed and directed the studies related to quality improvement at MIT. Morrison was one of the PhD students of Sturman, and he wrote a very interesting paper that still is very good to read, Insights from Modeling the Dynamics of Process Improvement. And he presented it in 2007. I was there when he presented it, so I heard his lecture. The reason why this model is interesting is because it has only two feedback loops, but still it tells us a lot of things that are important, and that helped also to look deeper into the depending Sturman model. Also, it allows us to look deeper at some other issues, which I will explain in a moment, like the issues of steady state and changes from steady state. So that you get the right picture related to information security, in the model you will see a variable which reads problem introduction. Okay, you can relate that to successful intrusions, to security incidents, because they introduce problems for the company. Then you will see a variable called process problems. They are problems that need to be processed, to be resolved. So they are unresolved problems, and therefore we call related to security incidents as unresolved security incidents. Then you will see a variable with the name problem correction. Okay, that means security incidents that have been resolved. Then there is another variable which is called unattended problem process level. And this you can interpret as the level of security incidents that aren't resolved that will happen if the security is badly managed, so to speak, unattended. Then there is the term average process erosion time. So if nobody is attending in security, then we'll take some average time for the security to decay to its worst state, to the unattended process level. That is what this variable means. So now we can look at the model. And this model is accessible. You have it in Fronta, so you can download it if you like in Venzi. And here you see what happens. Let's start here. The variable available time that I am circling here in the left bottom corner. That is the time that the company or the organization has in total per week. So again, suppose you have 100 employees. Now I am choosing a different number, 100 employees. Suppose each employee works 40 hours per week. Then you have 40 times 100, 4,000 hours per week that are available for the management to use in different things. And there are two things that can be done here. So that's why you have two links from here. Available time goes in this direction, and it goes in this direction. So one thing they can do is allocate time to produce. This is a company that is producing something. It doesn't matter what. The English term for something that is a product, but you don't say what the product is, you call it widget. Widget. Like this. We can take this away. It's no longer. A widget is something. So in Norwegian, this is English. In Norwegian, we could call it a things. So something, we don't say what it is, but it is something, some product, something. So our company is producing something. The unit, we call it widgets. And from the available time that the company has, the management can put so much to producing, to doing widgets, sorry. So here. Or it can allocate time to correction of problems. And remember, you can think of security incidents. So allocate time to correct security incidents that have happened. Okay? That you can imagine. Okay. Let's look now at allocation to production. Depending on decisions, the allocation of time to production can be changed, more or less. That's what this flow is showing. That's the way the decision maker would adjust allocation. Suppose they want to allocate more time to production. Okay, that's a decision. And the decision made, it doesn't mean it works immediately. Takes some time, on the average, to happen. So therefore, we have the parameter here, average time to adjust the allocation. And that's the time that goes to production. This time will lead to producing widgets. Why is it called the gross process throughput? Gross means anything that comes out, whether it is right or not. Forget for the time being the colors. Later I will explain why something is in red, something is in blue. So something is produced, and you can count that, and that's the process throughput. It is the gross process throughput because the process problem, the security incidents, for instance, they are creating problems, defects are happening. So what counts is not the gross process throughput, which has both good products and bad products, but the net process throughput, which is actually the total produced minus those that have been defective. And now the management will compare the desired throughput, how much they want out, with the net process throughput. And then you have a throughput gap here in the right corner in the bottom. I always lose the point of the mouse. That's a problem with PowerPoint here. So the desired throughput is compared with the net process throughput. There is a gap, and this gap leads to a resource gap. And from that, given the resources needed to produce a unit, there will come a feedback that will maybe change the desired allocation to production. So if the gap needs to be corrected, then the decision maker will have to allocate more to production. So that was this part here. And this creates a feedback loop that goes like this, which is the working hard loop, allocating that to production. The other part of available time goes to problem correction. What happens is that some problems are introduced, meaning security incidents are occurring. If they are unresolved, they lead to defects. So that's why you have the link from here to here. So what the company has to do is allocating time to solve these problems so as to reduce the number of unresolved problems there. And then the structure here, as you can see, it is modeled by assuming that the problems relate to how much resources you allocate depending on the distance to bad security and attend the problem level, then the incidents occur quickly. On the other hand, this model is very, very simple in that we do not consider the possibility to prevent the problems from occurring. We are only considering the possibility or to correct the problems that are occurring. This means, of course, that the problem is too simple for real life. It will correspond to a company that is dealing with security only in a reactive way. The resources are going in the direction of fixing the problems that happen. We call this, and if you go around that, that is a reinforcing feedback loop. We call it a rework. Why is rework? Yes, because it means it is reworking the problems that occur. But you have only two loops in this problem, in this system. And because you have only two loops, it's easier to understand what is happening. So ideally, and normally I do it like this, ideally this lecture I would give it before I let you work with a more complex problem. But this time, unfortunately, out of scheduled time, I had to put the first project already after the first set of lectures. And that's like this. So come back next year and I give you the problems in the right order. Okay, now I would like you very much to create this model yourself. This you will be able to create perhaps in half an hour. And all the information is there. Here is how you can do that. So you use SvenSim and you draw the model diagram, and then you have to enter the equations. Well, the equations are in another document in Fronta, a system dynamics model of process improvement. So let's have a look at it. This is the document, which actually gives you a lot of text to the lecture. So a lot of things that I have been saying are here, and so on. And then the variables are explained here. In fact, here I repeat that problem introduction, that means successful intrusion, security incidents, and so on. Okay, then we continue. Then you see the model. and here it's telling you how you do that in Venzim. And here then you start seeing the variables. The variable allocation for maximum problem correction, it's the maximum of hours per week that could be used by the company to address the problems, to address or to solve the security incidents. Since we have a total of 4,000 hours per week, that's the assumption, then you could, in theory, put the people, all the people, to deal with security incidents. Of course, nobody will do that, but that's the maximum that we need to put. Then, other variables are the average process erosion time, give it the value of 40 weeks. Average time to adjust the allocation. Remember, that's how much time it takes on the average to change the allocation of resources from producing to resolving problem. We assume that takes 1 week. The total available time, as I said before, it is 100 people working 40 hours per week, so that gives you 4,000 hours per week. The average time to correct problems, here we assume it is 16 weeks on the average. Initially, process problem is at the level of 0.4. We assume it can be between 0 and 1. 1 is worst, 0 is no problem at all. We put 0.4. Then the productivity of production time, that is how many products, remember witches, that are produced per hour of working. So it is 1.2, not per hour working, 1.2 witches per hour. And the 1 and 2 that you see here, they are footnotes. So here in the bottom, there should be a footnote explaining what it is. It says this parameter value is different from the one used in reference 3. But just in case you could get confused. So it is there. So productivity is how many witches that are produced per hour. If somebody is working, and we assume that is a simplification, that everybody is equally productive, and so on. And then you continue entering equations. And here are the equations for the different variables and the units. So if you create this, if you follow this, you can create a model that invents him. Actually, not quite, because you will see in a moment that we need some more quantities. But again, what I would like you to do, and this is a very good experience for you, is copy the model, enter the equation, put this value. You will recognize many of the equations. For instance, this equation here, max of 0 and of minimum available time zone, that's something that you saw in the project, and probably you understood why there is max and a minimum there, and so on. So you will see many equations are familiar, and that's no wonder, because this is a simplification of the model that you develop. But you will see soon that we can look deeper, because the model is simpler, we can understand some things better. But then the point is, after you do all these things, there are two variables left. Desired throughput and initial allocation to production are not defined. And then the question is, why do we leave two model parameters undefined? Undefined, then of course it is for the time being, because we are going to define them. Well, the reason for doing that is because we want to have the model in steady state. So let's go back to the slides. Two variables are still undefined, the desired throughput, and the initial allocation to production. So if you enter all the equations, all the things that I told you to enter, you still have two variables that do not have a value. And the reason is the following. Whenever it is possible, sometimes it's not possible because what you are representing is in a state of growth or non-equilibrium. But if possible, make the model in equilibrium in steady state. That means that the base for comparison is a situation where all the model variables stay constant over time. And why? Well, because then you can see and compare what happens if you make changes. Otherwise, if the model is changing over time, things are going up and down and so on, it's very difficult then to understand if I make some intervention in the model, the change was caused by me. Maybe it was caused simply because the whole thing was in movement. But if you have a model that is in steady state, then it's easier to understand the impact of policies and so on. And you will have noticed, if you were observant, that the project that I gave you was nearly steady state to begin with, not quite. And that's because it's not always easy to create a steady state model if you have nonlinear relations. But I did my best to make it nearly steady state. It started and changed a bit, and then it was relatively stable and so on. So you could therefore answer my questions. What happens if you allocate more time to this or allocate less to this? But in this model, we will see we can really achieve an exact steady state. And then I think I have to stop now because I programmed there. Okay? I think, didn't I? When did I start actually? Yes, 20. 20 plus 45, no, 55, 2 more minutes, I think. Yeah, wait a moment. 20, no, I can go till 5 past, isn't it? Yes, I can go till 5 past. Okay, I'm confused a little bit. Let me check with my friend here. Okay, I sent a message. Okay, so again, this steady state is very, very important because we want to understand the model. We do not just want to simulate the model, we want to understand it. Okay, so back to the this here. So the question is, how do we achieve? How do we determine these two variables that are left, these two, so that we have a steady state? Here comes the procedure. The reason is like this. If all the variables are constant over time while we are simulating, then what goes into the stocks must be equal to goes out. So we can express it that the net inflow for all stocks must be zero. They do not change. In addition, if you have balancing loops, and we have a balancing loop here, they must be in equilibrium, that is, the goal of the balancing loop is satisfied. So Let's look now at the model, and I have it here in benzene now. We have two stocks, process problems, and allocation to production. If all the variables are constant, then the stocks are also constant. And that means for this one here, that what goes in, problem introduction, equals to goes out, problem correction. So it is like a bathtub. If you are filling in with water and water is getting out, then to have a steady level, that the level of water doesn't change, what comes in is equal to goes out. So that's the one condition. Here you have another stock. In this stock, we have only one flow, which is going in. If allocation to production is constant, it's not changing, that means adjusting allocation must be zero. Otherwise, if it was something different, it will increase or decrease. And then, if you look at the balancing loop here, in order that it doesn't change, the net process throughput must be equal to the desired throughput, so that the throughput gap is zero. Okay, back to that. Here are the equations. Specifically for this model, that's the first stock. What goes in, problem introduction, is equal to what goes out, problem correction. The second stock, allocation. What goes in is adjusting allocation, so it must be zero, otherwise it will be changing all the time. And then finally, the balancing loop. The condition must be that the net process throughput is equal to desired throughput, so that the gap is zero. That means now that we have to look for values of the two quantities that are not defined yet, so that these conditions are satisfied. How do we do that? Okay? We have to work through. And that means we have to go through the equations. This is described in a document that you have in front of. And if you go through that, then you end up with desired throughput is 1,440 witches per week. And the initial allocation to production is 2,000 hours per week. And then we will see that the simulation is like this. This is constant. Or you can see that in Vensim. I am going to come back to how to determine this. But now, if I simulate, then here you see all the graphs. They are all constant. So I have a lot of variables. Net process throughput, thick blue line. Desired throughput, thick red line. Actually, you don't see both because the blue line is on top of the red when you display it, so they are equal. Allocation to production equilibrium, the green one, so you see it in the bottom, and so on and so on. By the way, don't get confused, the scales are different for the different variables. You have to read it like this. The first variable, net process throughput, the blue one, has a scale going from 1,000 here to 2,000 witches per week. So this volume here is somewhere in between. Actually, I know it is 1,440. So that's what this value represents. The next variable, desired throughput, is the same. And it falls equally here. The next volume is allocation to production, which is this here. And the scale is from 2,000 minimum to 4,000 top. So the green line is at the value of 2,000 hours per week. That's the allocation. Next one, process problem, equilibrium. Where is it? The scale is between 0.4 and 0.8. And since we don't see it, I guess it is somewhere here, which means under the same line. And the gross process throughput, this thin line, is this one, and the scale goes from 2,000 witches per week to 4,000 witches per week. So you can read it here at 2,000 something. But the point is, all these variables staying constant over time. Now, back to what you have to do in order to determine this. This is described here in the document, which is a system dynamics model of process improvement. And here is the algorithm. And we need to understand this algorithm. You can do it perhaps in a different way, but it says in equilibrium, the level or the stock process problems gets the same value as initial process problems. So let's have a look at it. Indeed, if you have equilibrium, initial process problems is a start value. It doesn't change. So you know this variable is equal to that. So that means that you can already say in equilibrium, process problem is the value that initial process problems has. Process problems is in principle a variable, something that can change over time. But now we know it has the same value as the constant value initial process problems. So that's the first step in the algorithm. Okay? Now, from that, you could compute problem introduction. How? Okay? Let's look at this. Problem introduction is this. How can you compute it from this? Well, okay, because the equation for process problems is computed from this. So now you reverse engineer that. And you continue with this, doing all the things, going through the model, until you come to resolving for the parameters. I can show you the algorithm. I hope I have it here. Let me see, how many do we have? Here. This here will be actually the results of doing the algorithm. So this was a constant initial process problems. The first stage said set process problems equal to initial process problem. Okay, so process problem is 0.4. Compute problem introduction, and so on and so on. And then you do that and you get this. Require that problem correction must be equal to problem introduction. Okay, you get this. Then at some step, initial allocation to production comes out through this algorithm. But it is now very important, and that finishes this lecture, that you, after this, work a little bit with this. We can do that in the beginning of the next hour. I would like you to start doing this template, so you will get